Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. So today we're going to talk about the science of IVF, what goes on behind the scenes after your eggs have been collected and the scientists have taken over. So when you go in for your egg collection, what the doctor is aiming to do is to get as many eggs as possible. Each follicle, which is that cystic area in the ovary that contains the egg and the follicular fluid, is aspirated out. The fluid is sucked into a test tube. The test tube is handed to the scientist who's sitting with a microscope in the operating theatre. And each set of follicular fluids is looked at to identify the egg. In about 80% of follicles, we will find an egg. So not every follicle has an egg that is harvestable. When the scientist finds the egg, she puts it into a culture medium in a warm test tube, and that's where it will stay in that nice warm environment all the way through until the embryo is put inside you. Temperature control for the embryo is vital. What we're trying to do is mimic what goes on inside your fallopian tube, inside your uterus, because the closer we can get to nature, the more successful we will be. So an egg collection takes somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes, depending on the number of eggs that are available, number of follicles that are available, and the ease of the procedure. The scientist at the end of the procedure, we'll have counted up the eggs, and in most IVF services, that number is written down either on your hand or on a piece of sticky tape. And so when you wake up or when you recover from your sedation, you'll know exactly how many eggs you've got. The scientist then takes the eggs to the laboratory. Again, they're put into an incubator to be kept at body temperature and in an environment with a lower oxygen concentration than the atmosphere outside that we breathe with each breath. The oxygen concentration is lower because inside our bodies, that's the situation. Again, we're mimicking nature. Your partner will have, by this stage, produced his sperm sample and it will have been processed in the laboratory. By processing, what I mean is that we'll separate a small volume of the most motile sperm to put with the egg in about 2 or 3 hours' time. Nature wants fertilization to occur about 40 to 44 hours after the beginning of your surge of hormones that releases the egg. In an IVF cycle, we're mimicking that surge by the trigger injection. So we collect the eggs between 36 and 38 hours after that injection, and the scientists wait for another 3 or 4 hours before they put sperm with the egg, because we know that's the time that nature would want it to be. In normal IVF, the sperm and the egg are put into a well in a dish and allowed to basically go for it. May the best sperm win. We put about 50,000 sperm around each egg, each in their own little receptacle, waiting for fertilization to occur. Those are then put aside into a new incubator, and in this incubator, they have their own personalized supply of gas, and the culture medium that they've been put into provides them with their personal food supply. The next morning, the scientists will open up the incubator and take out the dish and look under the microscope to check that the egg has actually fertilized. Now, we tell that by the fact there are two little dots. They look a little bit like two eyes in the middle of the egg. They're called the pronuclei. And each one of those are the chromosomes from the husband and the wife. At this point, fertilization has not yet occurred. The actual physical mixing of the chromosomes from both parties happens subsequent to this, in the few hours after this, something called syngamy. The Catholic Church doesn't regard a human being to have formed until they get the mixing of those chromosomes. So those two pronuclei signify that a sperm has entered, but do not necessarily, in their eyes, believe that a human being has been produced. Subsequent to that mixing of the genetic material, the syngamy phase, the first cell division will occur in the next 18 hours. And then that cycle begins, each cell dividing, 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 dividing. So by day 3, we expect to see an 8-cell embryo. Sometimes they're 6, and sometimes they've gone beyond 8. But that's the average. The scientists will look at the embryo at that stage and decide whether it's good quality or not. At that point of what's called the cleavage stage, it was traditional that we would transfer embryos into the body at that stage. If you go back 10 years in Australia, probably 90% of embryo transfers were at the cleavage stage. Today, less than 20% are cleavage stage embryos. We've moved on to growing the embryos for a further 3 days. During that time, the cells continue to divide, and we end up with a blastocyst, which has somewhere between 100 and 200 cells. By that stage, the embryo has decided which cells are going to become the baby, what's called the inner cell mass, and the outer layer of cells, which will become the placenta, called the trophectoderm. By growing them on to 5 days, we certainly increase the pregnancy rate of that first embryo transfer. What has happened is that we've lost on the way those embryos that were not going to make it. By doing that, in a sense, we put them through an obstacle race, and the best, the fittest, have won out. So putting a blastocyst back improves the background pregnancy rate by something like 30%. So a single cleavage staged embryo gives you a pregnancy rate, live birth rate, of something between 15 and 18%. A blastocyst will give you a live birth rate somewhere between 25 and 30% across, on averages, across all age groups. So blastocyst is where most clinics are today. Some clinics whose laboratory systems haven't been perfected in terms of blastocyst culture will stick with cleavage stage, and cumulatively, the pregnancy rates are probably similar. So if you put back 5 cleavage stage embryos month on month on month, you'll end up with a pregnancy rate around 30 to 35%, which is what you get with a single blastocyst transfer in a woman under 38. By growing onto blastocyst, you are shortening the time to pregnancy. It's at that blastocyst stage where we can go on to genetically test the embryo. So if there's a need from a genetic disease perspective, or in an older woman where we're not sure that we're putting back an embryo with normal chromosomes, we can actually biopsy, take 5 or 6 cells out of the blastocyst and send them off to have the genetic makeup of those cells tested. That work has revealed that a blastocyst in a woman at 30, even though it looks beautiful, has nicely expanded, has grown well, 40% of those embryos will actually be genetically abnormal and would never succeed in the uterus. By 40, the abnormality rate has gone up to over 80%. And by 45, 98% of all good-looking blastocysts are genetically abnormal. So we followed an egg all the way through to becoming a blastocyst. It's a remarkable process that we're now able to watch with time-lapse photography. We can, every 15 minutes, take photographs of the embryo and watch it go through its various stages. There have been claims that documenting those changes helps us pick a good embryo. It may be the case, but the data is not fully supportive as yet. So in this episode, what we've done is track the eggs that you have harvested from you all the way through to a blastocyst. It's a delicate process, and we're getting better and better at it. I hope that when you go through this process, the outcome is positive. And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.